Tom Coleman spent 16 years in Congress as a representative from the Kansas City area. Most of those years were spent dealing with agricultural issues like the farm credit system, rural development, or even the environment. These days, the former congressman has a very different mission, and that is pushing the idea that the president of the United States is illegitimate and should be impeached. Tom Coleman, by the way, is a Republican. He left office in 1993, and he joins me here in the studio. Congressman, nice to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Nice to be with you.
You know, you've been out of the news for a number of years, but you've burst back onto the scene in a big way here with your call for the impeachment of the president. What kind of reaction have you gotten?
Well, first of all, let me say, yes, I was a Republican for all my life until about 2 years ago.
Did you switch to the Democratic Party?
I haven't switched to anything.
You've just left the party.
I think would be. And Ronald Reagan said that when he was a Democrat, the Democratic Party left him. Mm-hmm. He didn't leave the Democratic Party. I just reversed that process.
Okay.
The party left me. I didn't leave the party per se.
Former independent Congressman Tom Coleman.
I'm now independent.
Yeah. So what kind of reaction have you gotten?
Believe it or not, public officials I try to stay away from because, I do might have bodily harm there. But from the people who do talk to me, who are operatives of the Republican Party, former pollsters, former officials of various components of the Republican Party, they say, good, you're doing well. Keep on.
Huh.
And from that standpoint, I really don't care. I want to talk to the American people. I want to talk to whoever is interested. Charlie Broomfield, who is a friend of both of ours, set up a little meeting last night in Northland, my old district. Mm-hmm. And we had people show up here. And there's a lot of people like me who may have been Republicans at one time who are fearful of this president because of what he represents to our democracy.
Fearful in what? I was going to say, yeah. In what way?
I mean, everything. It's chaos every day. He's over in Japan right now making light of the fact that the Russians intervene in our elections. He and Putin are sitting there on the stand, and it's kind of like a joke now. Well, you know, the joke's on the American people if we don't do anything about it.
I can't help but wonder, have you heard from the president himself since you've made this declaration?
No, I haven't. I don't need to hear from him. I think he has bigger fish to fry than me.
You know, most Republicans, maybe I'm referring to public officials here, at least publicly, aren't with you. And I'm wondering, what do you make of that?
Well, that's a real good question because I ask myself that all the time. It came up last night in this meeting that we held. The only thing I can think of, and one of the ladies there had the same thing, and it was, it's hard for people who voted for Trump to say they made a mistake. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. So I'm not telling people they made a mistake. I'm just simply saying, wake up and smell the coffee. Look what's happening. We have an erosion of our democracy. I fear for our grandkids and the next generation. I've never been, a person believing in conspiracies.
Right.
This may not be a conspiracy, but there's a lot of problems here with this president.
When you say you worry about our democracy in terms of what it can mean to our grandkids, articulate that for me. What do you mean?
Well, Trump has attacked the FBI and the CIA and the courts. I mean, those are the people set up in our institutions to keep us safe and secure in our society. He tells the press that they're fake news, and when he has these rallies, he calls them scum and everything else. That just reduces the trust factor of the American people with the information they get. So freedom of the press, which is, in the Constitution, is under attack. And I could go on and on. He has gone over to NATO, our allies, and said, all these hateful things. And then he buddies up to people like Putin and the dictator in North Korea. And it just is unbelievable that it's happening in front of our very eyes.
You know, this is such a break from the norm for presidents of both parties forever. And as we sit here today, though, most experts would suggest that President Trump has at least a fighting chance or maybe a good chance of getting reelected. So what's happened here? You have these dramatic concerns, and yet this president could get reelected.
That is always the problem, and that's what we face. He has a base of 35% to 40%. I don't think we can reach those people until a catastrophe happens, and he's leading the way towards that.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, last year's elections in 2018 showed what happens when people get fed up, and they voted. A lot of people said well, they voted for this or that issue. No, they voted against Donald Trump last year.
So you see hope in that from your vantage point.
I do see hope in that. And frankly, I think I don't know how any candidate, even with a good economy, has such bad numbers that Trump has and can win. But he could if the Democrats put up the wrong candidate. And that would play into his hands.
You know, a lot of people look at this president, Tom, Congressman Coleman, and they wonder, you know, this 35 to 40% of the electorate that he seems to have in his corner. A lot of people think he's really got them in his corner. He says that famous quote, he could go out and shoot somebody and people would still be behind him. Why is that? Why has he managed to lasso, I guess, so many people to his side?
Yeah. You know, I'm not trained in the psychology of the mind, but I think that there's probably some answers there. People do things against their own self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
The irrationality of the voter sometimes. It's beyond
me. So you
me.
Think this is irrational because they insist that this is a guy who is speaking their language.
Yeah, well, it might be speaking their language. Go out here in farm country and find the number of farmers who are having to deal with the tariffs. They don't have any markets in China anymore where they sold a lot of their stuff. It's now overhanging the market, driving their prices down. And they're underwater financially as well as literally the floods. So why would they think that this president has some great grand plan to save them when he never has had a great grand plan? He's impulsive. Everything he does is shoot from the hip.
And yet, Congressman, we've had leaders of the farm community, the agricultural community on this show, and they're not expressing too much panic at this point. There's concern, but they're standing by this president.
Those are organizations, and I see them on TV as well. They get interviewed on the networks, and they're doing what they think their job is. But it's like everything else. Once it starts eroding your financial position of his members, let's say, of the Soybean Association or something, he'll hear about that and then he'll have to back off. But then it'll be too late because, you know, then you've lost your farm.
Former Missouri Congressman Tom Coleman, who served as a Republican, he's now an independent, is here in the studio talking about the need to impeach this president. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. If you have comments, you can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Congressman, you published an op-ed in the Star last month calling for the House to investigate the president. I want to read just a little bit from it to give our listeners a sense of what you said. You wrote this: failure to pursue impeachment is to condone wrongdoing. To condone wrongdoing is to encourage more of it. To encourage wrongdoing is to give up on the rule of law and our democracy. To give up on the rule of law and democracy invites autocracy and eventually dictatorship. You feel so strongly, I can't help but wonder, again, why your successors in the House today from the Republican side aren't embracing that idea.
Apparently, they're afraid of being twittered.
Mm-hmm.
There are no profiles in courage in the Republican Party anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that someday, before it's too late, there will be. And I ask, what kind of people do we have in office, the Republican Party, in Washington, that don't understand and see what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And I think the people are finally going to rise up and say, look, and the members themselves, and I'm asking senators especially, because that's, I think, the impeachment, if it ever happened, will go through the House because the Democrats control the House.
That's the argument, because it'll stop in the Senate because it's Republican controlled.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't go forward because of just the words that I wrote that you read. You're condoning it, all this activity of Trump, if you don't do anything about it. And that's the only route. The Mueller report and all that to set aside. He could not indict the president. There's a rule of the Department of Justice, but there's plenty of collusion. There was plenty of obstruction of justice, and that's what we're going to find out when Mr. Mueller testifies on the 17th of July and what will happen through other hearings.
Autocracy is a word I just butchered. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Mike from Overland Park. Mike, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning. Just a couple of comments.
Yes, please.
Comment one, if you can't see this, you don't want to see this, as far as the corruption and misdeeds going on in the presidency. Item two, why are the Republicans so complacent? I think part of it is because Mr. Trump may have some goods on many of these Republicans. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mike, thank you. What about that? Trump might have goods on the Republicans. Does that make any sense to you, Congressman?
No, I would have to respectfully disagree with that idea. It's that they're too weak and that they don't want to be primaried.
Mm-hmm.
And the base being what the base is, like everything else, if you have 35 or 40% of the general public, you've got 85 to 90% of the self-identified Republicans who approve of what Trump is doing. Now, you are either in the wrong party at the wrong time, or you are going to be afraid of being primaried. And I say this, if you're not able to overcome a right-wing primary
challenge,
then maybe you shouldn't be a United States senator.
Mm-hmm.
30 of the Republicans will be up for a re-election next year. That is really key because, who knows, they could come up with the majority. And then they would control the Senate. You still need two-thirds to convict a president out of office. But at that point, maybe the Republicans will see what's happening with a lot of their colleagues losing, and enough of them would go with the new majority Democrats mm-hmm. to impeach a president.
You know, you have said this is not the time for scaredy-cat politicians.
That's right. That's right.
This is a time to stand up.
It's time to stand up. And every one of these people, and I take no joy, Steve, in doing what I'm doing. I serve with some of them in the House. I know them personally after I got out of Congress. It's unbelievable that they are not standing up and that they're not doing what they should be doing. So from that standpoint, at the ballot box, they will only do something when it's only in their self-interest at this point. And that means they may lose the majority in the Senate or they may lose their own election.
Back to some phone calls here. Jim from Prairie Village, you're on with former Congressman Tom Coleman. Jim, good morning.
Congressman, good morning. I think equally as dangerous as Trump's actions with respect to the basic tenets of democracy are Senator McConnell's. Talk a little bit, please, about what you see in the future of the Senate and how he's able to maintain that chokehold on legislation.
Mitch McConnell,
well,
Congressman.
We talk about how Trump has some sort of control over the senators. I don't understand Mitch McConnell's appeal to the senators myself. He is only batting about 33% approval rating in Kentucky. He's up next year. I wouldn't be surprised that Mitch McConnell might lose an election or that he might retire. But the point of it is, he's the traffic cop. He allows whatever to go to the floor of the Senate to be done. He keeps all the trains running on time, and everybody's beholden to him. I don't get it. He is not the kind of leader or the public perception of the Republican Party that I would want, and it's astounding that the Republicans in the Senate have allowed him to get them into this position working with Trump.
Jim, thanks for the call. Our phone number again, 816-235-2888. Andrew from Gardner on the Kansas side. Andrew, you're on with Tom Coleman.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank you so much for the bravery that you're expressing here. And really just wanted to know why you don't think there's more of it. You've already talked about elected officials to some degree, so I'm wondering why there isn't more of it from Republicans in civic life. Just more folks like you standing up and saying this is wrong.
Where are the rank-and-file Republicans, Congressman?
Well, the fact that I'm a former congressman and a Republican is an appealing to the news media. So I have a little bit of a soapbox, if you want to call it that, to talk. But again, people who I knew as Republicans that were there last night told me and publicly also that they agree with what I'm saying and to thank me. It's no longer Democrat-Republican. It's whether or not we're going to keep American democracy. And previous caller is right on. And that's why I am speaking up and why I wrote the op-ed and why I've gone on cable television a lot, because I want to reach out to people and tell them that there is hope. And, I don't care if you're a D or an R, just do what you should be doing right. And I want to appeal to senators, especially in the GOP, and ask them, if it's all about you, why is it all about you because you're afraid of being primaried? What about your constituents? What about your own children and grandchildren? Do you want them to grow up in a society? I mean, it's happened before, Steve. You know this. It happened in the Soviet Union. It happened in Germany under Hitler. It happens in Russia with Putin. And now we see it in Venezuela. It's dictatorship, and the public, you know, you don't want to live that life, so you better start doing something about it.
816-235-2888 is our phone number. You pointed out in the op-ed, Congressman, that the current Department of Justice regulations prohibit the charging of a president with a crime. You say that policy is wrong. Why?
Well, I have read the memo. It's a legal opinion memo written in 1973 and then revised in October of 2000. And I understand the case that they make, but I don't think that you can make a case
that you don't want that level of chaos in our democracy with a president under indictment or whatever. Yeah.
And this guy sleeps till 11 o'clock and then plays golf. So, you know, we're not going to be bothering him as president. So a lot of their reasoning back in 2000 is you could throw out the window. Let's assume we've got that, and that's what Mueller had to follow. But in that memo, which I read quite closely, the word impeachment appears 68 times. They say the remedy for criminally charging a sitting president is not through the prosecution courts. It is from Congress. It's the House of Representatives who has to bring a criminal charge, and then that person is convicted or not in the Senate. And it's plain as day there. But nobody in the news media has picked up on the fact that there's something else in that memo other than you can't charge a sitting president.
You know, ultimately, you concluded that this president and his vice president, for that matter, are, to use your word again, illegitimate. Why is that?
Because they welcomed Russian interference. They knew it. Paul Manafort, who was chairman of the campaign, met with a Russian intelligence operative in New York City, where he gave them the polling information from the campaign and a strategic memo on how and why they needed to win the Midwest. Well, that's exactly where Trump got the presidency, in the Midwest.
And you say Vice President Mike Pence is also illegitimate because
Putin wanted both of them to win. They ran as a team. And that's the way it was. And I must say, I haven't heard one word out of the vice president about all the chaos and all the craziness and all the anti-democratic things that the president has done. He doesn't say anything.
You would expect the vice president to say something?
I certainly would if he has any idea that he has a political future.
Let's go to Cynthia from Overland Park. Cynthia, you're on the air with former Congressman Tom Coleman.
Congressman Coleman, I feel that, I'm sorry to say to Steve, that some of the cause of this chaos is how the legitimate news media do not challenge President Trump on air. Whenever he says something that's blatantly false, they don't say, that's not true, Mr. President, and that gives them a false sense of credibility with the legitimate voter. I mean, that to me is so, you talk about Republicans not standing up. I think the news media is not standing up by saying, this is not true on air to him, so he can stop using the media to his advantage.
You know, Cynthia, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I've never seen the media challenge a sitting office holder of any stripe like they have this president. I respect your opinion here. Congressman, what's yours?
Well, I guess I disagree with you a little bit, Steve. Mm-hmm. I think she's spot on. First of all, during the campaign, they carried all of his rallies from beginning to end. After the whole thing was over and the guy wins, the head of CNN says, gee, if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have carried all that live. They would just, you know, give him little clips or something like that. The problem I have with the news media today is the president will go out before he gets on the helicopter to fly to his next golf game, and he will talk to the media out there. And you can hear the hum of the chopper. And he will say whatever the talking points of the day for him are, and the news media just eats it up, and they carry it live like it's news. Everything he does is not newsworthy. It's just same old, same old. It's fake news. It's no collusion, you know, all the same bit, and that the news media there is covering it. And they have to be more selective in how they cover this president because he's different than every other president we've had.
Rick from Oak Grove. Rick, you're on Up to Date.
Thanks for the conversation, and thank you, Congressman, for speaking up. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for men of goodwill to do nothing. And that's what's happening. To me, the Republicans in the House and the Senate, they want to hold on to power, and they know if the president is impeached, they could lose the majorities and all the perks that go with it. And that's all that it's about anymore. It doesn't seem like there's anyone that's willing to stand up like they did to Joseph McCarthy and say, have you at long last no decency, sir? There's just nobody willing to do that. With all due respect, the only people that seem to be willing to do it are those that are out of office. And having said that, this guy, Trump, leads more of a charmed life than anyone I've ever seen. I mean, it's just like his whole life is a game of Jenga. If you pulled out one block, the whole thing would collapse, but none of those blocks ever get pulled out, and he just keeps going on. But we have to, you know, we have to speak up. We have to have people like this that will speak up, and somehow some All of right. those office holders be turned. Thank you.
Rick, I appreciate that. And Congressman, I want to end on this note. If Democrats, you write, opt not to proceed here, you predict dire consequences for them as well at the polls next year. What's the obligation of Democrats in your view?
The Democrats have a majority in the House of Representatives where impeachment has to commence and begin. They are now taking the steps. I'm not attributing it to my op-ed and to my appearances on television, but they're taking the steps that I wanted them to take, and that is to proceed to an impeachment. Now, you can call the hearings that are being held on Capitol Hill whatever you want to call them. The fact that Mueller will be there on the 17th will give some sort of face and humanity to his 430-page report. I think it's going to be a game changer.
Okay, that's former Congressman from Missouri, Tom Coleman. He served as a Republican. He's now an independent. Congressman, thanks for sharing your views. We sure appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. Time for coming up in just a couple of minutes, our film critics will be here to run down the best independent film showing this weekend. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the program, we spoke with a K-State professor about the African wisdom he brought to America. Hear that and other previous episodes. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. On Monday, more women are taking the matter of safety into their own hands, and that could include owning a gun. Two women shared their self-defense choices Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, the film critics are in the house to run down a whole host of independent films showing around town. Included in the list this time is Pavarotti, the biopic from Ron Howard on the great tenor, hailed as having one of humankind's greatest voices ever. Our film critics today, Cindy Haynes. Cindy, welcome back.
Very much, Steve.
Steve Walker is here. Stephen.
I am here. Thank you.
Bob Butler, you can read his reviews online at butlercinemascene.com, where you can also sign up for an email subscription, which I did months ago. Robert, how are you?
Greetings and thank you.
Cindy, let's turn to the first film today, Ophelia. It's a reimagining of Shakespeare's Hamlet told from Ophelia's perspective, based on Lisa Klein's 2006 young adult novel.
Well, the key here is young adult novel. This is a reimagining account of a of Hamlet's fascination with a young I've got housemaid on my mind.
Lady in waiting.
Lady in waiting. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it's the language is accessible, and this is a kind of film that's going to attract young people, and it should. It's beautifully photographed, and we've kind of have a young woman who's independent, intelligent, and depicted in a way that we've never seen depicted in anything written by Shakespeare.
Huh.
So it's not of Shakespeare's quality. It is an adaptation. It's like Romeo and Juliet that we've seen years ago. What was that, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and hopefully it'll make some kids interested in reading Shakespeare.
Shakespeare's Ophelia is a bit of a victim. This is a strong-willed young woman who says so in the very first, lines of the movie. She's played by Daisy Ridley, who, of course, is the current queen of the Star Wars universe, which is not a bad thing if you're trying to sell a Shakespeare-themed movie to young people.
Which explains why I'd never seen her in anything before.
Okay. And she's actually pretty good in this. I wouldn't say it's a, you know, a knock-out-of-the-ballpark type thing, but she's surrounded by some pretty good actors. Naomi Watts as Queen Gertrude.
Mm-hmm.
And her sister.
And her, yeah. And, yeah, in a subplot that I don't even know I want to touch with a pole.
Right. Clive Owens plays
Clive
Claudius.
Clive Owen, who has an unfortunate Prince Valiant wig that just doesn't fly. I'm sorry. But
yeah.
My email to Cindy after I watched it was, here's my review. Why? Why did we need to have a retelling of Hamlet from Ophelia's perspective? And this movie does not justify it at all.
Well, it sounds like we're getting this from a woman's point of view
Yes.
Does that justify it? You're saying no.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen Hamlet several times in several variations on stage, and Hamlet works. It's fine.
Well,
as it is.
Cindy, you feel differently, it sounds like.
Oh, I do. I mean, sure, the characters' names are the same. There's some similar plot elements, but it really is not Hamlet. It is not just Ophelia's story. It has a lot more going for it, and I think it is a film that would attract young people.
If I had my druthers, I would have preferred something that was a little bit less young teenagers in love and something somewhat more astringent along the lines of Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which was done 50 years ago.
They're in there, too.
Yeah, they're in there. and told the story of two minor characters in Hamlet and what happened to them. And that was very ironic, you know, postmodern.
Cindy, we got a clip here from Ophelia. What is it?
Yes, it's Queen Gertrude offering some advice or an observation and sharing it with Ophelia.
From Ophelia.
Have you seen how the hens in the yard peck at each other? Each choosing the one just weaker. Why do the ladies peck at you?
I'm not noble, my lady.
Did you know I was not raised at court? My sister and I were sent as girls to a convent in France. Even there were hens and they pecked.
Even the nuns.
But I had my sister to defend me. Read to me then, if you really can.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see if young people flock to a Shakespeare film here.
Don't hold your breath.
I was just going to say, are they marketing it to young people?
Is no.
No. Well, why aren't they?
I have no idea.
Well, it's I hate to say it, but it's sort of right now in the art film ghetto and the young people just are off the map. They have no access.
It's playing at Screenland Tapcade, so in case they're down there playing Donkey Kong, they can take it in.
Okay, let's move to The Souvenir, Steve Walker. In the early 1980s, a wealthy young film student becomes romantically involved with a difficult, arrogant man. Imagine that.
Yeah, and this woman is, they're a bunch of privileged Brits, and the couple are played by Honor Swinton Byrne. Hint, Swinton is Tilda's daughter, and Tilda Swinton plays her mother. And then she's in a relationship with a man who is nice enough on the surface, but has a very dark side. And I don't think we want to give that away at all. So it's about a rocky, tough relationship, but Tom Burke and Honor Swinton Byrne are really good, and Tilda's always great to watch. It's not a revolutionary either, but it's an interesting, honest portrait of a relationship that has its troubles.
It was written and directed by Joanna Hogg, and it's a semi-autobiographical story. Mm,
yeah, this I remember reading that.
Yeah. This is I'm just very impressed, though, with the performances in this film.
I found it to be a really strong mood piece. It kept me off balance all through the darn thing. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Something a little different then.
Yeah, well, it's about the power of addiction, about toxic relationships, and they pulled it off. It was produced by Scorsese. I wonder
was it really?
Yeah. What his involvement was.
Well, this is the kind of movie that, had it been done by a more pedestrian filmmaker, would have followed certain tropes that we've seen a million times.
Right.
But there's a totally different take on it, which I found to be very interesting.
Is it hard to watch at times?
Yeah, it is hard to watch at times.
It has a mood, for sure, that is unlike things that most movies that you see. You
know, violence in this thing?
Not really violence. But this is not a movie that chucks
emotional
you,
violence.
Emotional. Okay. It doesn't chuck you under the chin and invite you in. It kind of slaps you around a little bit.
Okay.
Swinton's, just a little bit of trivia here. Her daughter played Swinton's character, younger self, in the character in I Am Love 10 years ago, if you remember that film. Which
Love
was,
that film.
Yeah.
We got a clip, Steve.
We do. It's the couple arguing in bed, kind of a scene that made me laugh, negotiating who has how much of the bed.
Oh, okay. This is from The Souvenir.
You came closer to me and took up more of the bed. And you're already I would say further over than I am.
That's not true.
It is true.
No, it's not. I haven't got that much.
Bed dysmorphia. And then you accuse me of... I wasn't trying to cross any sort of threshold.
I have not got that much room.
You've got a foot on that side.
I'm
on a ledge.
That's from The Souvenir. Pretty good reviews around the table here as we visit with our film critics today on Up to Date, are running down some independent films showing in town. Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, Bob Butler here. Let's go to a film that intrigues me. It's a Ron Howard production. It's Pavarotti, a documentary about the great tenor and opera superstar. Bob Butler?
I have to admit, I love this movie, and I'm not an opera fan. And frankly, I'm just had a cursory knowledge of Luciano Pavarotti.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm watching this film, and I am absolutely sucked in because this guy, aside from being a big man with a big voice, had a big, joyous personality that is absolutely infectious. And also, you know, you tend to think of tenors as being these, you know, kind of like overweight behemoths. And as a young man, Pavarotti was gorgeous, practically. It's just real. I was amazed at what a handsome guy he was. This is Ron Howard obviously loves Pavarotti, but I wouldn't say this is in any way a whitewash job, because it also talks about the fact that he had a couple of mistresses that broke up his marriage. He was estranged from his first wife and his three daughters for a while. But they're all participating in this documentary, and in fact, the love they feel for the guy transcends any blips in the relationship.
Wow.
And that is absolutely infectious.
Who else has seen it?
I have not seen it, unfortunately.
Well, we got a clip here.
Yeah.
Late in his career, Pavarotti kind of hacked off people in the opera and classical world because he insisted on doing big fundraising projects with pop stars. Big fundraising concerts with the likes of, Bono, who is in this bit of dialogue you're about to hear here.
This is from Pavarotti.
Hello, I'm Mr. Pavarotti.
You have Luciano Pavarotti, the greatest singer on earth maybe who ever existed, calling you at home to try and get us to write a song.
He called Bono for ages. He became a friend of the housekeeper of Bono because she was Italian.
Our housekeeper, Teresa, he just got to know her. He'd ring and say, is God at home? The technique was one of humility, which is, of course, a very mischievous trick. He had turned our housekeeper into his consigliere.
The modesty. You don't think of a guy with this kind of reputation as being a modest person, but that's the feeling you get, that he was a genuinely good guy. I would have liked to have known him.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting that Ron Howard has gone the route of documentary filmmaking.
The
he did The Beatles 8 days a week.
Yeah.
Now this one.
Okay, moving on to a film title. Speaking of The Beatles, Yesterday is the title of this film. Bob, after a freak accident, a struggling musician is the only person on the planet to remember the music of The Beatles.
This is a, talk about gimmicks. This is a great freaking gimmick. Has anyone here ever fantasized that, maybe if Stan Getz had never actually lived, but I could play the saxophone like that, I could pick up all his solos and you know, that's the idea. A young musician played by a fella named Himesh Patel, he's a Brit TV star, but this is his first big movie, gets creamed by a bus one night, and suddenly he wakes up to a world where no one has ever heard of the Beatles. This works fine in a couple of ways. First, the first hour of the film are really funny as he tries to get his legs under him with this whole new worldview. For instance, we all know how many Shakespeare quotes are part of our common parlance, right? So he's wandering through life dropping Beatles lyric quotes, and people look at him like he's mad. They've never heard this stuff.
Huh.
He plays Yesterday for his friends who say, why have you been hiding this great song from us?
Huh.
Well, the question is, how far will he go in this fraudulent, you know, career of his where he's playing Beatles songs? And it goes a long, long ways. Now, the first half of the movie, and it's directed by Danny Boyle, probably the most freewheeling, try anything director we've got going, everything from Slumdog Millionaire to Trainspotting to, right. you know, he does it all, 28 Days Later, a zombie movie. And the first hour is terrific. The problem is that the screenwriter, Richard Curtis, who gave us the inexorable, almost unpalatable Love Actually, turns it into a traditional Richard Curtis rom-com in the second half, where the now famous hero has an on-and-off problem relationship with his girl, played by Lily James. They're both quite good. They're both very attractive. It's just that what had been a really exciting idea kind of hits the old narrative wall, for me anyway. We got a clip here.
Let's what is the clip here from yesterday?
Let me see what we got here. This is our man. His name is, what is his name in this? Jack. He's playing for his parents the new song he just, quote unquote, wrote. It's called Let It Be.
Jack's just playing us a new song.
What's this one called?
Leave It Be.
Let It Be.
Oh, excellent. Well, rock on, Jack.
When I find myself in times of trouble.
It's like a drink, Terry.
Dad.
Well, I'd already heard that bit.
You'll get a beer, please, Jake.
Excellent. Carry on, Jacko. I'll be back.
Hurry it up, darling. You're losing the crowd.
Okay. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes.
Hello, love. I'm just at Jed and Sheila's house listening to Jack's new song. Let him be.
Let it be.
Let it be. Listen, I'll call you back when it's over, all right? All right, carry on broadcasting, young man.
Maybe start after the first minute. I've heard it three times.
Christ, this is Let It Be! You're the first people on earth to hear this song!
Wow, wow.
So if the whole movie had been that great, I have to say that Himesh Patel has a good voice. He really handles these songs well. Most of them don't attempt to emulate the Beatles arrangements. They're done in a more folky, stripped-down version, which I think really works.
Yeah.
And in fact, all of his versions of these Beatles songs are now out on an album, and I expect it to be a bestseller among people who never heard the Beatles before.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, moving on as we review the good independent film showing in town right now. Let's go to The Last Black Man in San Francisco, Bob. Oh, it's Steve. Who's doing it? Cindy.
None of us have seen it.
None of us have seen it. We're not going to do it. Are we not going to do this film?
No, we wanted to desperately. The
distributor didn't provide us with the film.
So we're not going to do The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Let's move on to The Spy Behind Home Plate. This one is showing in town, Cindy. It's a feature-length documentary about baseball player Mo Berg, who was a brilliant scholar, became a spy for the U.S. Office of Strategic Services during World War II.
It's showing at the Glenwood. It's a film that is a fascinating look into that golden era of baseball, and that would be in the 20s and 30s. Berg was an okay baseball player. I wouldn't say he was a Hall of Fame catcher, but he was good enough to have a 15-year major league career. Now, the thing is, he spoke seven languages, had a law degree from Columbia University. He was a friend of Babe Ruth and Albert Einstein, and he wound up, as a result of being requested by the U.S. government, as he traveled with his baseball teams, he was spying during World War II, concerned about a nuclear weapon that the Germans might have.
So a fascinating story here, it sounds
like. It is. And last year, Paul Rudd played Mo Berg in The Catcher Was a Spy. And Paul Rudd's sort of a local guy, I guess you would say.
Absolutely.
And did not do Berg's story justice. This does. It's a very interesting, entertaining.
I've heard good things about this film. Yeah. The Spy Behind
whether
Home
or not
Plate.
Other, you know, whether or not you like baseball, this still is a very entertaining movie.
Okay.
It wasn't entertaining to me. It was just a lame documentary with talking head after talking head after talking head. With the same old archival footage over and over and over. Very tedious.
Here's why it worked for me. The woman who made it, I can't remember her name.
Aviva Kempner.
There you go. It's edited in such a way that these talking heads who could have been droning bores are edited so that they end up finishing each other's sentences, and it gives a real momentum to the whole thing. So it's like almost like several people and speak in one sentence to get out one idea, and that worked for me.
So kind of mixed reviews for The Spy Behind Home Plate, the documentary about Mo Berg, the baseball player and spy. Okay, Steve Walker, let's go to a film, Late Night. It's been out for a bit. It's a late night talk show host is suddenly out of touch, her monologues are irrelevant, and she desperately needs some help. And does she get it, Steve?
She does. And playing an irrelevant woman who hosts a late-night talk show, you couldn't get better casting than Emma Thompson. So she's terrific in this movie. She's funny. She's acerbic. She's not very likable.
The film's gotten sort of middling reviews, though, as I've looked around.
I've read a lot of positive things about it. And what happens is she's not had a female writer on her staff ever on her show until she meets Mindy Kaling, who was on The Office.
The Office fame.
Who wrote it, by the way, who wrote the screenplay.
For Emma Thompson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Ends up being on her writing staff. And the movie, I think, is delightful. Funny.
And it deals with a lot of subjects. Sexism, ageism, diversity. They're all covered.
Emma's great.
Yeah.
The first part's where she's trying to insert herself into this all-male environment and navigate her way through it is really, it works. The movie is structured, it's almost a parody of The Devil Wears Prada. You got the newbie and the grande dame.
Sure.
And in fact, in the last
scene
of the film, Emma Thompson shows up with Meryl Streep's hairdo from from Prada. But here's where it let me down. Whenever there is a movie about comedians, the comedy that is expressed in the movie is never enough to make me laugh, and yet the audience in the movie is roaring with mirth, and I'm going, what is so funny about that?
That's my problem with Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Nothing she says is funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and that's where the movie let me down.
We have time for a clip?
We do.
This is Mindy Kaling's interview with Emma Thompson's producer.
This is from Late Night.
So you went to our parents' parent company in order to make this interview?
Yep.
And you have no experience in comedy?
No, I'm obsessed with comedy. No, I've seen every episode of the show. I've read every book written about it. I do a little stand-up.
Where?
If you have a problem, ask a chemist. She'll always have the solution. Which kills with people who know about chemistry. And I'm actually emceeing a benefit in the city pretty soon. It's kind of cool.
Cancer isn't funny. A night of comedy in support of lung cancer. Jesus Christ.
Okay.
It made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
It, made me really want to refocus my attention on Emma Thompson's work, actually, as well.
I think the one mistake was casting John Lithgow.
Okay.
Okay. That film, Late Night, pretty good review here from Steve Walker,
good.
Recommending it. Okay, our final film, I hold it in my hands. Mm-hmm. It is American Woman, Steve. A woman raises her young grandson when her daughter disappears. This one stars Sienna Miller.
And it's on my top 10 list. We are 6 months through the year.
It's a great movie.
As of right now.
No kidding.
It's a terrific
movie.
It's held on. It's similar to Leave No Trace, Norma Rae, movies about middle class to lower class people and their struggles and their humanity and their dignity. I think it's a terrific film.
If I had to compare it, I'd say it reminds me of Tender Mercies, and that is no small endorsement from me.
But the notion that a kid has disappeared, that's a real tense premise,
that's
right?
The first 20 minutes or so.
Here's what's interesting about it. It isn't a thriller. And it isn't a mystery movie. It's about the moments between those life-changing events, about coming to grips with your family, with your responsibility. Huh. Sienna Miller, who has played lots of supporting roles. She was Cooper's wife in American Sniper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've seen her hold down a movie all by herself. She starts out as a 38-year-old floozy who's having an affair with a married man and hangs around the honky-tonks. Her teenage daughter, who has a baby, apparently there's something genetic going on here, goes out to party with some friends and never comes home. Now, eventually the mystery will be solved years later, but it isn't about the mystery. It's about this woman coming to terms with the fact that I have to raise this kid. I've got to re-enter society somehow. I've got to make something of myself. It's fantastic.
Let's get to a clip here real quickly, Steve.
This is Sienna Miller talking to a room full of volunteers who will be in the search party for her daughter.
It's been 3 days since we last saw Bridget. She left home around 7. She was wearing a pink sweatshirt and white sneakers. She had her hair colored a few days ago, so it's a little lighter now, a little more blonde. But not much. This is a mother's worst nightmare.
terrific performance. She's a British actress. You can't tell it in one scene.
She was born in America. Did you know that?
I did not, no.
That film, American Woman, lots of thumbs up here from our panel. As we wrap up here, if you had to pick one film to recommend to our listeners, Steve Walker, it would be?
American Woman. I want more people to see this. It's at the Glenwood Fine Arts.
Yeah. Cindy?
Same with me, American Woman.
Wow.
Same with me, but Pavarotti is the close
run. Wow, I didn't expect that.
And later today on my Facebook page, I'll post Steve and Cindy's recommendations, three to see, the three movies they recommend this weekend. Thank you all for coming in. Steve Walker, Cindy Haynes, Bob Butler.
Thanks
always appreciate
me.
It. Yeah. Monday on the show, the self-defense choices that some women are making, including guns. Our theme music is composed by the great Bobby Watson. Yesterday, the Lee Summit School District Superintendent expressed his hopes for the district now that diversity training has been approved. That and other episodes, you'll find them at kcur.org/uptodate. We had help this week from Linda Scheer, Maria Carter, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Emily Aiken. Have a great weekend, all. Stay cool. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.